Ahead of winter in the Northern Hemisphere, the European Union is looking for solutions to the continent's energy crisis. At the same time, it wants to reduce reliance on Russian energy imports and deal with growing unease at home amid rocketing utility costs.
Welcome to the What Matters Today podcast from the Geneva Graduate Institute. I'm Dan Graham, Head of Communications at the Institute. In this podcast series, we ask members of our faculty to comment on key global issues. The energy crisis is expected to get worse as we approach winter in the Northern Hemisphere. But will it? Are recent declining gas prices a sign that the energy crisis will not be as bad as expected? Will the crisis lead to a faster transition to clean energy? And does this crisis actually have a potential beneficial effect on Africa? These are some of the questions that will be addressed in this episode of What Matters Today. My guest today is Professor Giacomo Luciani. Professor Luciani leads the Master International Energy Transitions at the Paris School of International Affairs, otherwise known as Sciences Po, and is adjunct professor here at the Geneva Graduate Institute and at the University of Geneva. From 2010 to 2013, he was a global scholar at Princeton University. His latest edited publications include The Handbook on International Energy Economics, co-edited with Manfred Hafner, Combining Economic and Political Development, The Experience of MENA, and When Can Oil Economies Be Deemed Sustainable, co-edited with Tom Morenhout. His latest publication, The Handbook of International Energy Economics, which is freely downloadable, has been downloaded 423,000 times since its publication 6 months ago. Professor Luciani's MOOC on Coursera, entitled The Politics of Economics of International Energy, has had, as of last count, close to 57,000 enrolled students. Professor Luciani, welcome and thank you for joining us on this episode.
Thank you for inviting me.
I'm going to jump right in with my first question. How bad can the energy crisis in Europe be this winter? With gas prices recently falling to a four-month low, is this a sign that the situation is improving? Or should we brace ourselves for a difficult winter?
We really cannot say at this stage because the fact that gas prices has been falling is directly linked to the fact that the month of October has been extraordinarily mild in terms of temperature. And so the demand for gas has decreased by more than 25% year on year. So that may not be projected in the future. It will all depend on the severity of the coming winter. If it continues to be mild, of course, we will be very well. If, on the other hand, we will have a very cold spell that may cause problem, one should remember that at the moment, our strategic storage and seasonal storage is full. However, the storage only covers up to 20-25%, depending on the country, of winter consumption. So it's not that because the storage is full that we are, out of any problem. It is, however, a fact that because the storage is full, we cannot receive any more gas. We don't know where to put it. And that's why the price of gas has fallen very markedly over the past few days.
Okay, well, thanks for that. So in a recent report, the International Energy Agency claimed that the world is facing its first truly global energy crisis. The International Energy Agency said that the most effective policy is to protect customers from the impact of soaring costs and changing energy infrastructure had been introduced by the likes of Japan with its Green Transformation Program and South Korea, which aims to increase the share of nuclear and renewables in its energy mix. So could this crisis actually help speed up the transition to green energy?
I think eventually, yes, this is going to help the transition. However, there are many nuances that need to be underlined. Is this a first truly global energy crisis? I am not 100% sure about that. The crisis is very heavily concentrated on availability of natural gas, which is directly linked to the Russian aggression over Ukraine.
Right.
And that is originally a European affair. It is not a problem for Asia. However, Europe and Asia are now competing for the same limited availability of liquefied natural gas cargoes, and this has driven the price both in Europe and in Japan to very high levels. We just said that the price of gas has decreased, but it remains very much above historical levels. There is no such crisis in the United States. The price of gas in the United States remains much lower, very much lower than in Europe or in Asia. How is that possible? The answer is that in the United States, there is not sufficient available liquefaction capacity to export more gas to the rest of the world. Hence, the prices between the United States and the rest of the world cannot equalize. Gas is, so to speak, trapped in the United States. This will progressively change with new liquefaction plants entering into production at the end of 2023 or in the following years. So we might have more of a global market for gas. For oil, the market is effectively global. The price has increased at some point, but has then decreased, and it is quite likely that it might decrease further. The OPEC, so-called OPEC Plus formation, which includes Russia, has now deliberated to reduce production by 2 million barrels per day beginning in November. And that is a move that has been very heavily criticized by the United States especially. So we'll have to see whether it will be implemented, to what extent, and what the impact on the oil market will be.
Excellent. Just interesting that you mentioned that, because I know that in the U.S., the argument of gas prices is still very prevalent, especially in the upcoming midterm elections. Like, they're still saying gas is high. It's using that as a key argument.
It is. It is relatively high. It is higher than it has been in, say, the period 2015 to 2020. Certainly, one should remember that 2020 has been a year of extraordinarily low prices due to COVID. It is not higher than it has been in the previous 5 years, say, in between 2010 and 2014. The price was higher than it is now. So people have short memories and don't remember that we have already been in this territory in the past.
All right, thank you for that. The New York Times recently reported that many European leaders are looking to Africa for help. The article actually mentions, quote, "European leaders have been converging on Africa's capital cities, eager to find alternatives to Russian natural gas, sparking hope among their counterparts in Africa that the invasion of Ukraine may tilt the scales of the continent's unequal relationship with Europe," end quote. So do you think this crisis actually has a potential beneficial effect on Africa?
I would very much hope so, because Africa offers some extraordinary opportunities. It offers extraordinary opportunities in fossil fuels, and that is the reason that has brought some heads of state from Europe to Africa. We have made many very important gas discoveries over the past 10, 15 years. These were not developed, they were not yet exploited, because the market was dominated by very cheap Russian gas. So the prospect, the commercial prospect of developing these discoveries was uncertain. Nowadays, with the developments in Ukraine, it is clear that these projects will all be developed. And we are talking about projects in Tanzania, Mozambique, Angola, Congo, Nigeria, Senegal. There are numerous prospects. But having said that, it's not just traditional fossil fuels resources. Africa has huge potential also for renewables. And people always think about solar, which of course is one dimension. But I want to underline the huge importance and potential for hydroelectricity. Because hydroelectricity is a more reliable source of power than solar and may turn Africa into net producer, not just of what we call green hydrogen, but also of other energy intensive products whose future in Europe is necessarily challenged, in my opinion.
Thank you for that. And my final question is, according to Kristalina Georgieva, the managing director of the International Monetary Fund, half of Eurozone countries are heading for a recession due to the energy crisis triggered by the war in Ukraine. Given that many EU countries are at odds over how to tackle the energy crisis, what can the EU do to help resolve these issues? Can schemes such as Repower EU, which aims to make the European Union countries independent of Russian energy by 2030, be a solution?
Well, I think it must be understood that the recession, some recessionary effect, is intrinsic in the need to restructure our energy system. So it is a necessary, inevitable consequence of the war in Ukraine on one hand, but also more generally of the energy transition. Why do I say that? Because we have a system that is based fundamentally on fossil fuels. 80% of our energy comes from fossil fuels. This means that we have a whole developed capital base that is geared towards fossil fuels. And we need to move away from that and into something which is completely different. So what we are envisaging is a process whereby we terminate the utilization of existing and, in many cases, fully amortized capital stock that might otherwise very well serve for many more years. But we are accelerating the termination of this capital stock. And we are deciding to move, rightly so, by the way, that's clear. But we are deciding to move in a direction that necessitates very large-scale investment. There is absolutely no progress possible towards lower carbon emissions unless massive investment takes place at all levels, at the levels of individual households that need to insulate their homes, that need to install panels, photovoltaic panels on top of their roofs. All of this is capital investment, and not only many of the households do not have the available finance to do that, but in any case, if they do it, they have to detract from current consumption. The same is true for enterprises, industrial enterprises. To understand this, I mean, if you are an excellent producer of wooden chairs, and then one day, you know, the government tells you, you cannot produce wooden chairs anymore. You must produce chairs out of metal. Your entire workshop that has been working very well and was utilized to produce wooden chair is basically useless, okay? Because for producing metal chairs, you need completely different equipment. That's what we are talking about. We are talking about going from internal combustion engines in cars to battery electric vehicles. And all of that, you know, not only they tell you you have to produce metal chairs, but beware, because we don't have the metals available. Mm? We still have to open up mines to look for the metals and then refine them and then make them available to you. So God knows when this will happen. So, you know, you stop the production of wooden chairs and you don't start the production of metal chairs, at least not in the same pace. So there is a loss of production, which is inevitable. It is due to the fact that you are scrapping an existing capital stock and you need to create a whole new structure. So to believe that this can be, so to speak, resisted through expansionary monetary policy is nonsense, okay? Expansionary monetary policy, as we have had throughout the COVID phase, will only create excess demand that cannot be met. And this is exactly what has been increasingly happening, meaning inflation, okay? So then the central banks will have to abandon the expansionary policy as they have done or are doing, increase the interest rates and so on and so forth. So I think we need to be clear about this and acknowledge the fact that we will go through a period of slower growth, and especially what we need to achieve in our societies is a massive shift from consumption expenditure to investment expenditure. And that, to some extent, necessarily reflects in our lifestyle, because... you know, it was nice and sweet to consume a lot.
it was indeed. Thank you very much, Professor Luciani. Thank you so much for participating in this episode. That was Professor Giacomo Luciani discussing the energy crisis and the Ukraine war. This podcast series is produced by the Geneva Graduate Institute Communications Team. For more information about the Institute, please visit our website at graduateinstitute.ch. I'm Dan Graham. Thanks for listening.